This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. On this episode, we've got a lot of news to dive into. You've got Top Rank returning to live boxing out in Las Vegas, Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua reaching the financial structure for a two-fight deal that could begin in the summer of 2021, and Regis Prograis Maurice Hooker. Has that fight totally fallen apart? I bring in Lance Pugmire, the senior boxing writer over at The Athletic, to talk about that and much more. A little bit later on, Freddie Roach, the Hall of Fame trainer, he joins me to talk about how he's spending his time in quarantine, the future of Manny Pacquiao. Freddie has some thoughts about that. And we get into a couple of Mike Tyson stories from one of Tyson's old trainers. So stick around for that. Great conversation, as always, with Freddie Roach. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to my conversation with Lance Pugmire. All right, joining me now on the podcast, he is the senior boxing writer over at The Athletic and one heck of a good guy, Lance Pugmire, joining me on the show. What's up, Lance?
How you doing? Good to see you, Chris.
Good, man. I mean, we're at a point now where boxing has come back. Like, this is exciting. You got boxing coming back, you got boxing news out there. This is like, it's like finally we've got something to talk about.
No doubt about it. I think, I can't remember which fight it was. I think it was this guy Cash, who was just, you know, swinging and throwing punches the other night. And it was just like, you know, I know this really means nothing, but it was so nice to have the sport back and to be able to write about something again, you know, and I'm sure the fans feel the same way.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, before we get to that Top Rank show, I want to talk about the biggest news of the week and get your take on how big news it is. Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua, Eddie Hearn told me this week that there was a financial structure in place to have Joshua fight Fury at some point in the summertime. We saw Fury go on social media afterwards and confirm that there was, you know, some kind of deal in place for that fight to take place. Now, of course, there are obstacles here. Like, you've still got Deontay Wilder, who was incredibly dangerous, you know, in the fall for Tyson Fury. Joshua's got to get through at least Kubrat Pulev and maybe even Alexander Usyk if he decides to go that direction as well. But when you heard, you know, this news or whatever you want to call it, like, how significant is it that these two sides have agreed to a financial deal?
It's very significant from the standpoint of, look, I mean, this has been long in the waiting for these two guys from England to get together, especially with the possibility of all four belts being on the line. But like you said, I mean, as soon as you think about that and you think about what a mega event this is going to be for the sport, you say, whoa, there's some serious obstacles before these guys can even get to that point. And we know, like, Deontay Wilder, as he was trailing, you know, basically 6-0 against Luis Ortiz before knocking him out in that fight, Tyson Fury still has to deal with Deontay Wilder. And that's, you know, not a little task. I mean, if you go back to the first fight, it was very, very difficult on Tyson. And, you know, I know he fared a lot better in the second fight, but Deontay Wilder is going to know that his career is on the line in this third fight. And clearly he wants to be part of that fight against Anthony Joshua. So, you know, look, it's very exciting and it's something to look forward to. It definitely gives the sport a spark at this point where, you know, it is just coming back. But boy, the speed bump that is Deontay Wilder is could be, you know, quite a significant thing moving forward.
Yeah, look, I'm impressed with Tyson Fury with all this. Like, if Tyson Fury went out in November, December and knocked out Deontay Wilder again, he would probably have even more leverage. Like, he might even be able to squeeze a few more dollars out of Anthony Joshua. But, like, Tyson's been the kind of guy for at least the last couple of years who just wants to get these big fights done. Like, doesn't seem to be at all interested in these lesser fights. And you've been ringside for them, Lance. Like, he doesn't perform particularly well in these lesser fights. Like, whether it was against Tom Schwartz or Otto Vailin, like, he just doesn't get up for those fights as much as he gets up for Deontay Wilder and presumably Anthony Joshua. So I'm really impressed with Fury's willingness to do that. All that being said, 100% I agree with you. Like, Deontay Wilder is being, like, discarded in the same way Kubrat Pulev is being discarded. Like, Pulev, all due respect to Bob Arum, kind of should be discarded. Like, I don't give Pulev much of a chance. He's not Andy Ruiz. He doesn't have that hand speed. And the last time I saw Kubrat Pulev in with a real opponent or a top-level opponent, he was getting just steamrolled by Vladimir Klitschko in his last and only title shot. So I'm not bracing for Kubrat Pulev to upset the apple cart here, but Deontay Wilder can. Like, he has knocked down Tyson Fury twice. And how many times have we seen it where a guy is looking past an opponent and gets caught with something big? I mean, I do have questions, probably like you do, about Wilder's mental makeup after that knockout defeat. Physically, is he the same fighter after another surgery that he had after that fight? His training team, how is that going to shake out? But man, the dude still has a monster right hand. He's going to be more motivated than ever in what could maybe be his last fight. I mean, I don't know about you, but I think that if Wilder loses to Fury, I'm not exactly sure where he goes. Like, does he try to rebuild at 35, 36 years old? I mean, this is all chips on the table for Deontay Wilder, and he should not be discounted because of that.
Yeah, the best news is that these two sides got together and did, you know, engage and get the structure of the deal done, as you said. So I think that is very encouraging. I mean, that they're going to be working on now, you know, trying to find the best site that will bring in the maximum dollars for this event. And I know that there's some, you know, work to do on the TV ends of this still. But look, the fact that there's this partnership in place is very encouraging. And it does. I mean, look, if we know it's boxing. We love the drama of boxing, and how much drama is going to be attached to a Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder fight now with all of this in play and looming.
How, I mean, look, the site still needs to be determined, but how bad a look would it be if it didn't wind up in Great Britain? I mean, this is the biggest fight in British boxing history. I don't think they'd be a close second. Like, this is it. Two, you know, top level heavyweights for maybe the undisputed heavyweight championship. I mean, I know Saudi Arabia and the Middle East is out there with these mega dollars, but I mean, how bad a look would it be if this fight gets taken somewhere else?
I think it's a real bad look for exactly what you're saying. I mean, both of these guys are from Great Britain. This fight needs to be there. There's certainly going to be significant dollars on the table for Eddie Hearn and the Fury side to cash in on. And, you know, look, to me, the sport needs an event like that. We need another 90,000 people in Wembley or wherever, whatever soccer stadium you want to take it to. It's just so important, the optics of it. And to have these two guys in the country the whole time, you know, selling this fight and just making it, so it is going to be a worldwide event, you know, regardless of where it's at. But to have it in England is just perfect. You can just attach so many great storylines to it. They've got to do it, and there's really no excuse. I can understand, you know, the second part, maybe taking that one to Saudi Arabia, but it definitely has to start in Great Britain.
Yeah, and I mean, I was in Saudi Arabia for Ruiz and Joshua, and look, it was raining, so that contributed, but there really wasn't much of an atmosphere there. I mean, quite frankly, you need 90,000 drunk Brits at an event like this.
Please.
Like, you need it.
Please.
You need them all. Yes, like, you know, yes. You don't need, like, you know, 10,000, you know, Brits that are like sneaking in nips underneath their coats and sliding in.
Exactly.
There. I mean, you need just a mega atmosphere for something like that. So I hope they do the right thing, and I hope they keep that fight in Great Britain if it comes to pass. The other part of this, Lance, is will it be for the undisputed championship? And if not, does it matter? Now, we know that the WBC has been shoving Dillian White like down the road, like every 6 months, like, hey, you can get your title shot in December. Now it's February, but right now he's scheduled to get that title shot by February of 2021. At the same time, you've got Alexander Usyk, who moved up in weight class, and per WBO rules, he should get his title shot at some point in the next 6 to 8 months. And his team has said, you know, we're not stepping aside for something like this. So what's the best way to handle a situation like this? Do you fulfill your mandatories before a fight like this and maybe push it back down the road? Or do you say, look, if we have to give up one or two pieces of the title, it's worth it to make this fight happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it starts with the idea of, even if someone is saying that they're not going to take the step aside, you need to see what that step aside fee could be and try to pay it. You know, after that, you know, especially if part one of this Fury-Joshua fight is going to take place in the summer, then there is a timetable that would allow for the second fight to happen to satisfy all those mandatories with Usyk for Joshua and White for the, you know, Fury. But again, I mean, these are two more fights that you're adding in there, you know, before the biggest fight that everyone wants to get to. So look, if it becomes like this unbelievably, you know, complicated thing that you can't get past and they're going to be stripped, still the world wants to see, and the world still knows that these are the two best heavyweights in the world. And so look, lay down the belts, you know, sanctioning bodies. You think your belts are the most important thing in the sport. You're going to find out that they're not if you really dig in your heels on this subject, because the world wants to see Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua, you know, if Fury defeats Wilder, and there should be nothing stopping that. Again, think of the best interests of the sport.
It's easy for me to sit here and say this, Lance, but how great would it be to have White versus Usyk as the co-main on a fight like that? I mean, if you can
perfect,
like if you can scrap together enough money, that'd be big money to put that fight on as the co-main, with the winner, you know, guaranteed a title shot after the second fight between Joshua and Fury. That's just perfect. I mean, if you're Usyk too, like, God knows when the Chisora fight's going to be rescheduled. Like, they have both kind of said that it's got to take place in front of fans, so you're talking probably the fall at the earliest that something like that could happen. So it's really only, you're not really missing, it's not really staying off all that long. And to get a big fight like a Dillian White on a card like that, making the type of money, it's not for the heavyweight championship, but it's a pretty good consolation prize, and it keeps you in the running for a uber fight against the winner of that, whoever comes out of that back and forth somewhere down the line.
And then everyone in the world knows who you are too. I mean, look, these guys have some brand recognition, to, you know, bridges to cross here. So look, Chris, if me and you ran boxing, you know, the common sense and the logic of it all would, this would all happen. But I guarantee what you're going to hear is things like, oh, there's just not enough money in the broadcast to pay for all that. That can't happen, ... You can already hear it coming. So, you know, look, it does make all the sense in the world, and it would be perfect. It just, you know, to keep the momentum that is there with making a fight like this, but it won't happen. I guarantee it won't happen. There's going to be drama. Someone is probably going to get stripped. Maybe both guys, and we'll move on and have the chaos that reigns supreme in the sport.
Yeah, that'd be unfortunate. I mean, think about like what ticket prices could be if you add White and Usyk to the card. Like, you could charge three figures for nosebleeds. Like, you can charge 100 plus. And I've been at those Wembley Stadium fights. Like, I mean, some of them are way up there. You're just watching a screen at some point. So
yeah,
you could charge, you know, $100+ for nosebleed seats and have people clamoring for them, just dying to get them. That's what we need, man. That's what boxing needs. That type of atmosphere.
I totally agree with you. And, you know, look, let's hope it happens. Let's be very optimistic about it, but let's watch how it plays out.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's move on to boxing that's happening right now. You've got Top Rank returning this week with live shows in Las Vegas. Their first show was on Tuesday. I liked the aesthetics of it, Lance. I thought it looked good on TV. They did a really good job with the signage and the cage in the back. So I thought that part of it was great. But predictably, the fights were not. You had Shakur Stevenson dominating Felix Caballero, knocking him out in the sixth round in a very anticlimactic fight. Pretty much all the other fights before that were anticlimactic and not really all that eventful. And the ratings reflected, you know, just how kind of ho-hum the card was. I mean, really low numbers, right around, what, 400,000 viewers, something like that, right, for that fight. So give me your overall impressions of what you saw and what you think of how Top Rank came back.
You know, look, I mean, I think that they came back. They were the first to come back. I think the organization of Top Rank, not to, like, you know, not that I'm aligned with Top Rank, here comes the, you know, the accusation, but I think the organization of Top Rank really, you know, came shining through here. They got these fights in place. They found a venue that can host them. They did the testing that, you know, generated a positive from Michaela Mayer. I know we'll talk about that a little bit later. But, you know, everything was done the right way. And I agree with you. I mean, I think it looked very nice. I was actually very impressed with the whole production and the whole broadcast of it. I mean, the way that they had Tim Bradley and Andre Ward talk about their, you know, their own racial battles at a time of such unrest right now in this country. And then to see a great talent like Shakur Stevenson really show how special he is, you know, was sensational. I agree with you. Look, when I first saw this top ranked schedule for all these fights that are going to go into August, it was like, this is A versus B city. And all we're, you know, it's obvious who's going to win all these fights. You would have hoped that they could have done better. And clearly, you know, hopefully they are building up to these bigger fights that will be coming. You can build an interest in a fight like Shakur Stevenson versus Miguel Burchelt by allowing both of these guys to fight. You're going to show what a great talent, again, that Emmanuel Neveretti is, the super bantamweight champion. And then Top Rank will be able to offer, Todd DeBuff told me sooner rather than later, maybe as early as October, we'll be able to see Teofimo Lopez and Vasily Lomachenko. So they're getting there, they're setting the stage, but to me it just feels like one big advertisement for the bigger fights to come, when there was a better opportunity to, you know, have real action and maybe have these fights that will generate strong ratings. I actually thought that the ratings were going to be a lot stronger than that, but I think the fans know what they're getting, and when they see these matchups they're saying, well, you know what, I've been getting out and about now a little bit, and I'm going to just go back to doing that instead of sitting down and watching this fight. And that is unfortunate for the sport.
Yeah, I mean, because there were so many mismatches, there was so much fill time there. And it, you know, look, I agree with you that what Andre Ward and Tim Bradley said about some of the, you know, racial inequality they've experienced in their lives was powerful, powerful stuff. But when you get past that, it's just like just talking and talking and talking. It becomes like a talk show, and you're not getting what people are tuning in for, which is the actual boxing. And that's something that has to be corrected. I'm willing to give Top Rank a little bit of rope here, because we do know as their schedule progresses, you've got some better fights on the calendar. I mean, you go into to July and you're talking about Eleider Alvarez versus Joe Smith. That's a really good fight that I'm looking for. I mean, eventually Jose Ramirez is going to find his way into a ring with Victor Postol. Like, at some point that fight is ultimately going to happen. What I would correct immediately though, Lance, is you can't do 4 o'clock start times. Like, I know everybody's home because of this pandemic, but as you know, like, boxing more and more has migrated west. Like, the fan bases are much more, you know, kind of centrally located on the West Coast than they are on the East Coast anymore. And if you're starting something at 4 o'clock Pacific and the main card is like 6 o'clock Pacific, you're just not going to draw eyeballs. Like, people, even though they're home, a lot of them are still working, and they're working from home, and they're not tuning into boxing around dinner time. So if you're Todd DeBuff and you're ESPN, like, you've got to try to move this stuff, you know, deeper into the night, get stuff started at 10, 11 o'clock Eastern, so you get that 8 o'clock time window. I think that's an easy way to boost these ratings.
I think these guys are all smart enough to be able to adjust accordingly to the numbers that they've seen, so I would expect that to happen.
Yeah, hopefully that'll happen. One other part of all this was the testing procedures that Top Rank did. One of the reasons that card was weaker than it could have been was because Michaela Mayer, 2016 U.S. Olympian, very exciting women's boxing prospect, she failed her COVID-19 test. That's a positive for COVID-19. So Michaela clearly believes that she was never positive for COVID-19 and that the testing was flawed and she never should have been excluded from that event. That also had a trickle-down effect too, because Kay Caroma, her trainer, her assistant trainer, he is also Shakur Stevenson's trainer. So he was not allowed to be in Shakur's corner. That cost him something on that end. So what do you think of the way Top Rank and look, it's really Nevada that's doing this. It's the Nevada procedures. But what do you think of the way these procedures have gone down? Should they tweak it in any way as they move forward?
Absolutely. But I think that they're all kind of learning on the fly too. I don't think it was anything, you know, held against Michaela Mayer to keep her out of the ring, clearly. But I think that, you know, you see a positive and you want to say, let's get this person away from everyone else. I mean, it only makes sense. All the safeguards and precautions are going to be in place. And for Michaela, she has the opportunity with so many Top Rank shows still to come. She can jump in there, hopefully sooner rather than later, as long as, you know, all of the medical officials have, you know, scrutinized this situation and then can weigh in and say, like, you know, okay, now you're officially clear. It's unfortunate, but I think if you're an athlete participating in this type of environment, you almost have to concede that it's part of the game as well.
Yeah, I would say, look, once there's a positive test, you've got to be excluded. Even if you have a subsequent test and you test negative, then you're basically diagnosis shopping. You're saying like, well, all right, you know, this one's negative, so I'm going to believe that one and go ahead with it. What I would say is that until those other tests like the mouth swab or even the lower nasal swab or all these other tests, until these other tests are proven to be 100% accurate, you really have to do those horribly intrusive nasal swabs that everybody, you know, hates to every fighter all the time. Like, that's just
have you already done it?
I have not done it.
Me neither.
I haven't got the antibody test yet. That's next on my list. I'm going to kind of cross my fingers and hope that when I bro hugged Donovan Mitchell back in like March, I picked it up back then and didn't know it. So, but either way, like, it's not a perfect system, but you have to make sure you do the most conclusive test you possibly can. And once that test comes out, if it's positive, you're done. That's it. I don't care if you're Michaela Mayer. I don't care if you're Tyson Fury. Like, you have to be done. This is just the only way, I think, Lance, that boxing is going to work.
No, I agree. I mean, it's you have to respect, you know, what the findings are. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is for it to spread, you know, and how guilty would you feel? I mean, when you talk about Donovan, so, you know, I think they handled it right. I honestly do. Now it's just a matter of how quickly she can get back in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Which will probably happen sometime mid-July. Fortunately, the benefit of, you know, having so many shows, you can just put her on another one down the line. So it sucks that she had to have this one scrapped, but fortunately she only have to wait maybe a month, month and a half before she can get back in the ring. All right, let's talk about Ryan Garcia for a minute here. And, you know, Ryan Garcia is one of the brighter, if not the brightest young star in all of boxing. He's coming off back-to-back first round knockout wins. He's incredibly popular. We all know about his social media following, more than 6 million followers on Instagram, almost 400,000 followers on Twitter. He is a huge star in the making if he continues to this ascent up boxing. Ryan was pretty upset this past week about kind of his compensation for some of these fights that he's being offered. I spoke to Ryan on Monday night, and he basically pointed the finger at DAZN and said, like, DAZN, you've got to give me more money. I want to have a direct line of communication with DAZN to talk about my money. Now, you know how boxing contracts work, Lance. I mean, networks don't negotiate directly with fighters. They negotiate with promoters or even fighter managers, in the case of Al Haymon, and make the deal that way. And they turn around and make the offer to the fighter per the contract that they had. But, you know, Ryan's pretty ticked off nowadays. What did you make of Ryan's reactions these past week?
It's unfortunate. I mean, Ryan has also kind of boxed himself into a corner by talking about all these different guys that he wants to fight, including Abner Morris, which to me was like the ideal fight, Chris, for him to take at this point. I mean, you've got a three-division world champion who's chomping at the bit to fight you, who is coming off an extended layoff, had a significant eye injury that he was dealing with. And to me, it was for Ryan an opportunity to step in there with a name opponent and you know, again, kind of like show the credibility that I think we have seen in the ring. I mean, these two first round knockouts have been very sensational. This kid is developing, and he has it's all there before him. But again, it's a reflection of the times. You know, DAZN apparently is not ready to jump back into broadcasting fights right now. Apparently, this July 4th fight that they were talking about doing either at Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California, or in Las Vegas, was going to be, you know, aired by Facebook Watch. And certainly, you know, some dollars are going to be restricted at that point. So when you look at those contracts, and we don't know exactly the way Ryan's contract reads, but he should know what how it reads. If there's flexibility and the opportunity for Golden Boy to, you know, give him a quote unquote haircut and scale back the dollars that are coming his way based on the climate of where we are right now in COVID-19, that's just part of the sport right now. And, you know, to blame DAZN, like you said, is misguided, and to, you know, get all hostile and upset. Look, the most important thing for Ryan Garcia, in my opinion, is to stay in the ring, because so many people do want to see you fight. So many people are interested in you. So go ahead and make an appearance, just like Shakur made, to allow people to say like, oh, this guy's, you know, doing great, and I can't wait to see him fight again. He's missed that opportunity now.
Yeah. And, you know, I think Ryan is looking around at the fighters he considers peers right now, whether it's Gervonta Davis and Devin Haney, and seeing how much they're making and being frustrated. Because one thing Ryan can do very easily is he can go on YouTube and look at the views that his fights are getting, his knockouts are getting, even his interviews are getting, and say, I'm putting up big numbers here. Why is my compensation below what some of these other guys are getting? To Ryan's credit, like, I think he's willing to fast track his career maybe faster than Golden Boy is. Like, he's talking about, you know, you want to pay me if you want me to fight someone bigger to make more money, I'll do it. Like, you want to put me in with Devin Haney right now, I'll take it. If you can make a deal for Gervonta Davis, I'll take it. Like, he, in our conversation, he made it clear he's not asking for free money. He's not, and he doesn't, like, one thing he said was, like, I don't want to follow the Floyd Mayweather model. I don't want to protect my perfect record at all cost. I want to put it on the line every single time. And I really respect that, Lance, because as great as Floyd Mayweather was, how he chose opponents, I thought, was ultimately detrimental for boxing in the big picture. It just, he didn't go out there and take on the biggest challenges at the times they were most available. So I like the attitude of Ryan Garcia. So if I'm Golden Boy and if I'm DAZN, I'm encouraging that. I'm like, you know what? Devin Haney doesn't have an opponent. Let's make the Devin Haney fight in 2020. You've got Gervonta Davis out there, going to fight Leo Santa Cruz. Let's find a way to make a deal for Gervonta Davis sometime early 2021. Let's get this train rolling. If he's willing to fight these guys, let's start to make it happen. Let's not coddle him if he doesn't want to be coddled.
Right. But I think the situation at play is that, you know, Oscar De La Hoya and his matchmakers are looking at Ryan Garcia. And while they love, you know, his popularity, they're looking at his skills in the ring and matching them in their mind against someone like Devin Haney and Gervonta Davis and saying, we're not going to do that to him right now. Because look, we can say all these things about how popular and how, you know, what his upside is right now. But if he does get destroyed in one of those fights, look, what does that do to him, Chris? And I think that Golden Boy, especially when you look at its stable being so, you know, heavily emphasizing Canelo Alvarez, they need Ryan Garcia, and they need the career path of Ryan Garcia to be very long and very smooth. And so I don't think that they are willing to put him at the risk of those fights that, yes, he clearly wants to engage in. But for Golden Boy, from their for the sake of their business model, it's not exactly the best move to be making. And I think it's a very, very fascinating dynamic because you have, you know, one of these all-time greats in De La Hoya, you know, considering the future of this kid who is just so popular. And he is, you know, he's got the reins on him, and you can see it as clear as day. So how it plays out is, to me, it's one of the most fascinating stories of the sport, because clearly Ryan is a little frustrated. I'm sure Oscar's a little frustrated, and where it goes from here is, you know, TBA, and it's going to be worth watching. It's going to give us a lot of great stories, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and I completely get that side of the argument. I mean, matchmaking is incredibly important for the development of young fighters. If you put a guy in too fast, too soon, he might get knocked out and it might change the course of his entire career. So you've got to be careful. And that's why, like, I mean, this pandemic sucked for everybody. But for Ryan Garcia, like, he was on the right path. Like, a Linares fight next was the right fight. A guy that guy like Linares, back end of his prime, very susceptible to knockouts, but was coming off a pretty big knockout win of his own. He's a name that would have done a really good crowd at the Staples Center or somewhere out in Los Angeles. And then if you beat Linares, maybe it's a Luke Campbell, kind of one of those fringy, you know, title holders. If Campbell beat Javier Fortuna, he would have had an interim title, or whatever you want to call that WBC belt. That would have been another nice step up. And then when you get into 2021, coming off those fights, I think then you're in business, Lance. I think then if you prove you can beat a Linares and you can beat a Luke Campbell, you should be willing to go in there with Gervonta Davis and even Devin Haney at that point.
I agree. And to ask me, like Bob Arum sometimes says, you know, like, I'm not a matchmaker, but there is just something, and as I watch all of these guys, it feels like Haney and Davis are more of the complete package than Ryan Garcia. I know Ryan Garcia has shown significant power, but I just feel over the course of, you know, 10 to 12 rounds, these other guys would be picking him apart and really kind of showing the body of work, their entire toolbox. And I think that's what lingers in the mind of Oscar and Eric Gomez and Robert Diaz and all those guys over there who are saying, this guy is so important to the future of our business. We can't mess this up.
Yeah. Look, I agree with you on Haney. I'm not so sure about Davis. Like, Davis to me, like, he's a two division title holder, but Like, his biggest win was Jose Pedraza, and it's like he's been another guy that's been kind of matched really well on his way up. And at 135 especially, like, he hasn't shown me anything at 135. Like, 130, he's been powerful. 135, I don't know. Can he hold up to the power of some of those guys? Like, Haney is a very good boxer, a very skilled guy, all complete package. Teofimo Lopez, a cut above them both at this point, because exactly, he's got the most significant wins. But, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, if Ryan can get... I like to see Ryan in with one of those Linares types, Campbell types.
Exactly.
You know, this summer. And then maybe you go on to one more fight sometime in the fall and then, you know, get it going. I mean, we have to remember he's 21 years old. Like, 21. The guy's got
Look, and Golden Boy, honestly, I think they had it nailed. They were going to put Ryan Garcia against Jorge Linares at Staples Center, you know, around July 4th. And that's the perfect fight. But Jorge's stuck in Japan. He can't get over here right now. And so you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, if Ryan could just be a little bit more patient, I think those big dollars are coming, man. Like, his popularity, like,
no doubt.
He is, like, one thing he said to me was like, I want to be the guy that breaks down barriers, specifically, you know, promotional barriers. Like, when you're Ryan Garcia and you're drawing 10,000 to Anaheim on a Friday and you're doing big numbers on DAZN and you're, you know, having 6 million Instagram followers, you know, actively following your career, like, you become the money man. I don't care how talented other guys are. Like, you are the guy they want to fight because dollar bills follow you. So if you can be a little patient, I think Ryan Garcia, it'll all work out for him. All right, let's talk about a fight that unfortunately looks less likely to happen than maybe it did a week or two ago. Regis Prograis and Maurice Hooker, they were scheduled to fight in April of this year before the pandemic hit. That's a fight that's been talked about, Lance, over the last couple of weeks about being rescheduled. Just this week, I mean, I had been hearing, Lance, for the last few weeks that there was no way Maurice Hooker was going to fight at 143 pounds. That was the contracted weight for that fight to happen. So I called Brian McIntyre, his new trainer, and I asked BOMAC, I said, you know, do you guys still want this fight? BOMAC said, absolutely, we still want this fight. Will you do it at 143? Absolutely not. We will not do it at 143. You know, Hooker is done fighting at 143 pounds. He wants to fight. He needs to fight just at 147. You turn around and you call, you know how this chain goes. You call Lou DiBella, you call, you know, Prograis' manager, and you talk to Prograis, and they won't fight a pound above 143 pounds. So it seems like that fight, which is one of the tentpole fights of the first quarter of the year, it seems like that fight is off the table. What do you make of how this all went down with Brian McIntyre effectively saying, if it's below 147, we're not going to do it?
It's a damn shame, obviously. I mean, for, like, you know, we were just talking about with the Dillian White against Usyk fight. I mean, this was a great fight, non-title fight that really was going to liven up, you know, whatever division, 140 and 47, when you consider Hooker's desire to move up there. But look, as I looked at this fight, I liked Regis in the fight. And I think that Hooker probably took a pretty strong look at the way things were. And if he's got a BOMAC in his ear saying 147 is your best weight, you know, and that's your best path forward, he doesn't want to lose two times in a row. So I think that he's going to, you know, he's making a smart business decision for his future rather than, you know, engaging in this fight that, yes, we'll have a lot of eyeballs on it and have a lot of tension around it. But honestly, I view him as the underdog in that fight, and I think he was going to get a little bit exposed by Regis Prograis, who, you know, had that tough loss to Josh Taylor, but clearly, you know, wants to stand as a special champion and views this fight so importantly. So Hooker, it's an opportunity to, again, keep working with BOMAC, go to a weight that he's better suited at. He's going to, you know, be involved in a couple fights that aren't going to be as significant for a while. But at the end of the day, I'm sure he believes that this is the best thing for him. And as we know, boxing is an individual sport. So unfortunately, you know, the timing again of COVID-19 has complicated the sport, and, you know, it's taken it on the chin.
You know, I agree with all that. And I think the biggest mistake Hooker made was agreeing to the fight in the first place. Like, I've been covering Mo Hooker fights for the better part of the last year plus. Like, him cutting weight has been painful to watch. Like, I was at the fight where he fought Michael Lespierre, and making 140 at the weigh-in, he needed somebody to physically pick him up and effectively help him to the stage to step on the scale. Now, he was a little bit better, you know, against Jose Ramirez, certainly had a bigger fight, took it seriously. But after that fight, you know, he said, look, I might have to think about going to 147, cutting down to 140. you know, is really tough. I mean, the guy's like 5'10", 5'11". He's a massive 140-pounder. I never, honestly, the April fight, Lance, I never thought he was going to make 143. I thought he would have gone, like, come in like 145, 146, and had to pay something out of his purse to make that fight ultimately happen. I think the biggest mistake was saying, I can contractually sign on for this fight. But, I mean, the one real thing I would say, like, if you're going to go move up, don't expect to make this kind of money anytime soon. Like, he was going to make close to seven figures to fight Regis Prograte. Like, you move up to 147, and I don't even know if Eddie Hearn keeps him. Like, I don't know what Eddie Hearn can do with him at 147 pounds. Maybe you go over to Top Rank. What do you do? Like, you're not going to fight Terrence Crawford. Like, he's now a stablemate of yours. So are you going to fight Kavalauskas, like, in a fight like that? You could lose. Are you going to fight, you know, one of the PBC guys? You could lose. Like, you know, the one thing I'd be thinking about if I'm, and look, I think this fight potentially could be resuscitated with the right number of phone calls, but if I'm Hooker, I got to be thinking, yeah, I might lose to Prograte, but I'm walking out of there with more money than I have, you know, really since Ramirez. So, I mean, I've got to have that in my mind too. Like, if I can just make the weight, I get a big payday. And even if I lose, I can say, you know what? It was the weight. I'm going up to 147. I'm going to fight these low-level fights.
That's a great point.
And try to get my career back on track there.
That's probably the best way it can get rehabilitated, Chris, because, you know, I think probably in Maurice's mind, he was looking at this fight and saying, like, look, I'm making all these strides under Bomac. I really feel good about where I'm headed, but I got to deal with this damn weight, and I'm going to end up diminishing myself to the point of my training's not even going to matter. So, again, I think he's looking at the long-term parts of this, but you're right. I mean, the money that's on the table is very difficult to walk away from. And if there is a chance to repair this thing and say, like, okay, you know, as I've reflected on this thing and taken a couple days, let's go ahead and do it.
It's not like he has no shot either against Prograte. I'd favor Prograte too, but Hooker can punch. Like, that hook is real. And if he catches Prograte right, it's lights out. So, I think it's definitely a winnable fight. I feel for Prograte too, because I'm not exactly sure where he goes, you know, from here. I mean, he was hoping this was going to be, you know, the kind of fight that erases the Josh Taylor loss and catapults him back up into the upper echelon of the 140-pound division. But, you know, you got Ramirez, you know, occupied by Postol at this point. Then he's going to move on to Taylor. Taylor, he's got a fight of his own that he's going to take and then, you know, hopefully try to unify. And, you know, Prograte says he wants to stay at 140. I don't know what's there. I mean, I asked Mikey Garcia this week. I'm like, would you be interested in Regis Prograte? He's like, yeah, if X, Y, Z, you know, all that. He listed four other fighters that he wanted to fight instead of Prograte that were there.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know, Lance, I don't know what the landscape looks like with Prograte at this point.
Well, I think he's just going to, again, he's going to have to take a fight that is, you know, not going to pay him anywhere near what he was going to get here. And then he turns free agent. And then, you know, just let the bidding take place and see what, you know, get the best deal that you can and find your way into that, you know, series of fights against, you know, Taylor, Ramirez, all those guys. And, you know, I think he has no other option but to do that. It makes all the sense in the world to me for him to move over to Top Rank. But that has yet to happen. But I would expect that to be the obvious move for Regis.
Yeah, certainly a lot of fights available to him over there. And when he eventually does move up to 147, I mean, he and Crawford have had some back and forth already. That's a pretty good fight.
Good stuff.
You know, 140 title holder, former undisputed at 140. Like, you can sell that fight, you know, especially down in the South maybe, or even back in Omaha where Crawford does really well. Lance, always appreciate your time, man. Terrific stuff. Thanks for joining me.
Anytime, Chris. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, joining me now on the show, he is the Hall of Fame trainer. You know him from his work with Manny Pacquiao, Miguel Cotto, of course, Mike Tyson. We're going to get a little bit into that now that Mike Tyson's back in the news. He is the great Freddie Roach. What's up, Freddie?
Not too much. How about yourself?
I'm good, man. How are, I mean, you're one of those guys, Freddie, as long as I've known you, you have worked every day almost, tirelessly in the gym, sundown to sunset. What's it been like the last, you know, 3 months to do something completely different?
It's not the most fun in the world. I mean, I'd rather be in the gym, you know, being at home with my dog and taking him for walks 3 or 4 times a day to get some exercise in there. And I'm waiting for someone to give the green light to open sports back up in the world, and something I think we need very, very, very much. I think we need that for America, you know, sports around the world.
You, of course, Freddie, as I mentioned, you have some notable fighters on your roster. You also train, like, a lot of young guys up and coming the ranks. I mean, how often are you hearing from your guys wondering, when can we get back? I mean, what's it going to look like? How does this all work?
Yeah, about daily, you know, they'll call here and there. And, you know, is the gym open yet? You know, when we get started, when's my next fight? You know, this guy called me, that guy called me. But nothing really set yet. Nothing in ink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the case for a lot of people. It is good to see, you know, Top Rank is starting to get some shows off the ground. I think PBC is going to get some shows off the ground this summer. DAZN might get some shows off the ground as well. So hopefully we'll be back sooner rather than later. It was interesting, Freddie, as you know, one of the storylines of this week was Floyd Mayweather working with Devin Haney. And it got people talking about how sometimes great fighters, a lot of times great fighters don't make great trainers. You were a very good fighter who turned into a great trainer. I mean, why do you think that is? Why do you think it's so hard for great fighters to make that transition, whereas guys like yourself, even Buddy McGirt, you know, they have successfully made that transition?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I mean, a lot of those great fighters, things come very natural to them, and they come to them with ease. I mean, you show them something, and they catch it right away, you know. And then some guys, you've got to stop and teach them and work with them and, you know, go over the entire move. And, you know, and that's where I'm at. I mean, I was like, one day I was talking to the great weightlifter there, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Arnold said, "Freddie, you're lucky you weren't that good a fighter." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you weren't a great fighter. You were a tough guy and all that. But if you were a great fighter, you wouldn't be a great trainer." I said, "Why do you say that?" He says, "Because I'm the worst trainer in the world." He says, "I can't train anyone to lift 5 pounds." He says, "He just doesn't understand why they can't do it this way at this much weight, because it came natural, very natural to him." And I thank them for the compliment. But the thing is, like, guys like Mayweather and stuff like this, I mean, they, you know, things come easy to them. He's a very good boxer, and he does everything very naturally. And I really think there was some people that were born to fight, like, you know, like James Toney. He says, you guys have to train. He says, I was born very natural too, and they don't make good trainers because they expect you to be as good as them.
What was, I mean, you certainly had an apprenticeship early in your career where you learned a lot to be a trainer. What was some of the most important lessons that you didn't know going into training that you learned as an apprentice?
You know, get my point across and so forth, because working with Eddie Futch was a great thing. I mean, you know, he's my trainer for 10 years, and then I worked for Eddie for 5 years as, you know, his assistant trainer. And I learned how to catch the mitts, and I learned it the best way. And, you know, Virgil Hill told me, he says, "I learned how to fight, catch mitts over in Cuba, and they have the best style I think there is." And we went over and we started working together, and then he became my first world champion. And, you know, things started going very well, and it was a lot of fun and working with these guys. And then, you know, all of a sudden this guy, Manny Pacquiao, walks in my door and says, "Can I work the mitts with you?" You know, and, "No, you can't right now," you know, and, you know, we didn't even know his name at that time. I'm not sure anyone did at that time, but, you know, we started working, and we hit it off very well, and we got together, and we understood each other very well, and he became one of those guys who could really, really learn and absorb a lot of knowledge.
You've talked about this a million times, Freddie, and it's, you know, one of the all-time great trainer-fighter relationships, but do you still look back and think about, like, I mean, just how the circumstances, like Manny Pacquiao walks into your gym and you click, and just what that's meant for his career and for yours, of course.
Yeah, it was just, it was everything for my career, and hopefully it was maybe a lot for him also. I mean, because he had two losses going in, you know, coming to America. He had even lost two titles along the way and so forth. And he wanted to show me some tape of his fights and so forth. And so I said, yeah, sure. And so he said, so the first two tapes he shows me is when he got knocked out. And I said, why are you showing me these tapes? He said, I want you to know everything. I want you to know everything about me. I don't want to hide anything. He said, knocked out by a body shot one time and knocked out by a headshot one time. And he said, now we got to make this so this doesn't happen again. I said, oh, that's exactly what we're going to start right now on that. And we started working fundamentals. And, you know, he had a very good right hand, but his left hand wasn't as educated and so forth. So we started educating both hands. We started doing drills of over and over and over. I mean, it's just usage. I mean, if you use the right more than the left, the right's going to be more knowledge. But if you even them out, they'll both have knowledge. I mean, it's like being in the NBA with playing with one hand. You know, you can't do that. I mean, in like a pro fighter or a championship fighter, he needs two hands and needs it to work them both very well.
You know, Sean Porter, of all people, said recently that, you know, if he had to choose between careers, would he take Floyd's or Manny's? And Sean said he'd take Manny Pacquiao's career, you know, just because of the type of fights that he was in and, you know, the wars he was in. And of course, you know, as a boxer, you want to take as little punishment as possible. I get that. But I kind of agree with him, Freddie. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. Like Pacquiao, you look at, you know, whether it's Morales or, you know, just go down the list of his just incredible fights. Like the memories he made were pretty impressive.
They were impressive, and the memories to me are right around the corner. And I just Pacquiao knocking. I mean, he's a guy that in the gym never tried to hurt anybody, never tried to knock anyone out in the gym. But all of a sudden, bang, a shot landed, and someone got knocked out, and you know. He wouldn't do it on purpose. It was just natural, and he had that natural speed. And I mean, and you didn't see that punch coming. And if it hit you, you'd be on your ass. And and then he carried over into the fights. And then I remember the first time he knocked somebody out with his right hand. We worked on that for like 3 months, over and over and over and over again, over again. And it's getting better and better every day. And then all of a sudden, we go to Chicago, and he knocks out one of the local fighters there. And then Manny Pacquiao becomes a two-fisted fighter, and now he's really dangerous.
Really dangerous, that's right. You were asked a lot over the years about, you know, what would have happened if Floyd fought Manny in like 2009, 2010, when they were both kind of at one of their peaks. I'm wondering, I don't know if you've ever asked this question, but, you know, Floyd, I thought, was always at his best at 130. Well, he was really good at 130. Like when he beat Diego Corrales, that was impressive. Yes. Pacquiao came up the ranks at 130. How do you think a matchup between Floyd and Manny at 130 would have gone?
You know, I love that fight. And of course I love Manny in that fight. No, but Mayweather, you know, he was a very smooth fighter, not as big a puncher as Manny, I don't believe. But you know, Manny had that punch, and he had that speed, and speed is one of the best assets in the world, in my opinion. Well, you know, if you can pick anything in the world to have, I would pick speed, because nothing takes that place. Nothing takes over the speed that Manny Pacquiao had. And he works it so well. And then, you know, I mean, these guys getting hit with shots that they're not seeing from their weak side, and bang, fight's over. And, you know, Mayweather's a good fighter, yes. And I hope he becomes a good trainer. I really do. It's a very difficult thing to do. And, you know, I had discussions with a lot of people about it. After I was told that I'm good because I wasn't that good a fighter, and then swallowing that like shit, is that really why? but you know, as time goes on, you realize that this is true, because people that are great are just really, really there for a reason. And the thing is, you know, we don't have to teach those great guys a lot. And they know a lot. And again, they everything comes really, really natural to them. Mm. And
yeah, a lot of the greats have tried, whether it's Floyd or you know, Roy Jones has tried back and forth every so often with
You know, Sugar Ray Leonard, he was a great fighter. Because I think Sugar Ray is one of the best fighters of all time. I mean, people say, you mean Robinson? I said, no, Sugar Ray Leonard. He's a good fighter. He beat a lot of guys along the way, and a lot of weight divisions also. He was in the Olympics. He was a great fighter, and I feel that as he tried the training end of it, it just didn't work out that well for him. I mean, you know, it was okay, but it wasn't great.
Yeah. It's gotta be frustrating if, you know, you know how to do it yourself, but you know, you can't, the guy that's doing it isn't responding in the same way.
And that's one thing that working with Eddie Fudge was really good, because Eddie was one of those guys that could teach me along the way and teach me exactly what I need to do and so forth. And, you know, being around Eddie was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. He was my trainer for a long time and so forth. But, like, he stopped being my trainer when he started getting some bigger fighters and some heavyweights and so forth. And it was real difficult to get his attention and so forth. So his assistants weren't nearly as good as him. But then when I came back as an assistant of his, it really worked out well, because I got everything. Now it's clicking in my head. When I was a fighter, my body didn't absorb it that good. But as a trainer, I absorbed it much better, and he taught me a lot of good lessons, and I still use a lot of them today.
Mm-hmm. So 2019, Freddie, was like a really impressive year for Pacquiao, being 40 years old and to, you know, put together wins over Adrian Broner and then Keith Thurman to reclaim a piece of the title, a real piece of the title. I mean, you were part of that. Like, how much of that, I'm wondering, surprised you that Pacquiao at this stage was able to do what he did against Broner? And then Thurman, you know, even though coming off like a hand injury from, you know, 6 or 8 months ago, was still, you know, widely viewed as one of the top two guys in the welterweight division. Did it surprise you that he was able to do this?
No. Work ethic is unbelievable. I mean, he still has that work ethic that he came with when he came to America the first day. His work ethic was unbelievable, and he just worked. And the thing is, it's still the same now. And last week, I talked to them, and I talked to them about, you know, I say, you know, so-and-so is calling you out, and I said, that might be a good fight. This might be a good fight. And he says, Freddie, just put someone in front of me and tell me how to fight him, and we'll get the job done. So he still has great work ethic. I mean, there's nobody that works in the gym like Manny Pacquiao. You know, he averages about 4.5 hours a day in the gym alone. That's not counting road work or running in the morning or exercise at night. Manny, this Sunday, take Sunday off. I mean, you've had a good week. Go to church. Hey, you know, just take it easy. I can't do that. I said, why? He says, well, my opponent might not take Sunday off. He says, that's a very good point.
Can't argue with that.
You can't argue with that, no.
That's incredible. I mean, when you talk to him, though, Freddie, is like, what does he want out of the rest of his career? Is it just fight till the wheels come off? I mean, are there specific accomplishments that he still feels he can make? Is it just making as much money as possible? What's your read on what he wants?
I think he wants to be the first president world champion in that country. You know, I really do. He wants to make his country better. He wants to improve everything and make it the best he can. And, you know, here's a kid with a fourth grade education, and wants to be president, and wants to do a good job. And I think he can do a good job, I really do. But sometimes I wonder, you know, with his education, can he run a country? I mean, I don't think I could run a country. So
I can't either.
You know, but Manny, he really, you know, dig down and he works hard and he'll do the best he can for everybody out there. And I think he's good for the country and I think he'd be a great president. Mm-hmm. I vote for him for sure.
So you want to? So is it your belief that he just wants to keep going and maintain his title until a possible presidential election? Is that so? The boxing career and the political career kind of intertwined.
Yeah, I think they'll come together for a moment, and then he'll go one way, and you know, and be a good president. I feel, and I think that's why he's still going into fights and so forth. For the notoriety, you know, so you know, people still know who he is and so forth. And this is what he always knew what he did best. This is what he does best, and that's fight. And he's the best boxer. But the thing is, being a president, I mean, being popular and you know, getting votes is very important. And I think that's part of the plan. But like, if I tell him, if I do ask him right out, flat out, man, you want to be president? He'll smile at me and he'll walk away. he won't give me nothing on it.
Is there, I mean, you're part of the team there. I mean, he's probably going to get one fight in 2020. I mean, hopefully, if it comes together. I mean, what do you advise on that? I mean, you're right. Everybody's calling him out. I mean, he has an opportunity to fight whoever he wants. He still represents a lot of money in boxing. I mean, what makes the most sense to you?
There's always good fights out there. And the thing is, you know, one thing about Manny, he doesn't want to just beat anybody. He wants to beat the best out there. He wants to fight the top guys. I mean, you know, like Mike Garcia called him out a couple of times. I think that's a good fight for him, of course. And, you know, Robert called him out on one of your shows. it made me smile. Because I like that fight from Manny. I think it's a great fight. But the thing is, you know, Manny might want to go a little bit maybe higher and fight, you know, Triple G, you know, one of those guys who's supposed to be the best guy in the world today. Because Pacquiao still desires to be the best there is.
Would you put him at 160?
No. I would not put him.
I was going to say.
I would not advise him to go 160. No, now we're getting a little crazy. But Manny, you know, putting him at 47 was a risk at one time. When everyone told me, you know, why are you moving him up to 47? And I said, well, he's very natural at that weight. He makes a weight really good, and you know, he can make 40 pretty easy. He can actually make 35 if he digs down and so forth. But that's a little bit more effort and so forth. But like, you know, to fight the biggest guys at 147 and where the money was, it's just, it made good sense to all of us to, you know, fight, you know, the great Oscar. So it was a great deal and it worked out very well. It worked out really good for us.
I like the Mikey Garcia fight too, because it feels like, it's almost like a Marquez type of fight with the way that Mikey fights, sort of a counter-punching. And God knows, those four fights were some of the best fights of this century between those two men.
Yeah, they're very good fights. And that's why I smile every time Robert mentions his brother Mikey. And because I'm all for that. I'm all for that fight. I like that fight also. Again, with... since we're in jail right now, when we get out of jail, that can happen. Mm. Yeah. That's what I call this mostly, because that's kind of what I feel like, you know. I feel like I'm very secluded. I can't go nowhere. I can't talk. I'm not a good phone person. Just, you know, it's not my favorite time of my life.
Well, it's certainly going to be memorable when we look back on it years from now about what.
We will never forget this. No. I mean, this is something that we're going to tell stories about this for the rest of our lives. I mean, this is a really strange, maybe great moment in our life. Maybe a better society, better people, but like. Keeping away from those 6 feet rules, I'm not so sure.
It's crazy. I mean, every day, and who knows when that's going to ultimately change. Before I let you go, Freddie, Mike Tyson's back in the news, and Tyson is talking about, you know, he's clearly in shape, you know, much better shape than he's been in years. and he's talking about doing exhibition fights. What was your reaction to kind of hearing about Tyson coming back as you were a trainer for him for a period of time?
Yeah, and Mike's a great guy, and I did train him for a couple of fights before the end of his career, and his heart really wasn't in it at that time, and if he didn't knock you out within a couple of rounds, he'd get a torn meniscus in his knee or an injury somewhere here or there, and get out of the fight. And then, but the thing is, Mike is a great puncher, and he trains very hard. And being with Mike for two fights, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I enjoyed it. Catching him on the mitts was very difficult and very, very a lot of fun. I mean, getting whacked by Mike Tyson with the right hook isn't my favorite spot, but. It happened, and I lived through it. So
your story, you tell so many good stories, Freddie. That but one of my favorites is you stealing Tyson's plane is one of my all-time favorite stories.
You know, it was the plane was there, and everyone says, "Who's in charge?" And
this was going to set it up. This was going to Memphis, right, to fight Etienne. Is that right? Yeah.
And they said, Freddie, you're in charge. And he says, is there another plane for Mike? He said, yeah, there's another plane for Mike. I says, if we don't take this one, we still get charged for it? Yeah. We're still going to get charged. So there's another one for Mike. So let's get there and get settled and let Mike take the next plane. And then he told me, he says, the plane that you left me, it didn't even have food on it. We had ordered a Chinese takeout for my daughter. He says, you son of a bitch. So I wasn't allowed in his room for 4 days before the fight. And then one night about 2 a.m, he called me up and said, it's Freddie. He said, come on down, let's warm up a little bit. And we did some mitts and we warmed up, and the fight was the next day. And it was a great fight for him, and everything worked out well. We're friends again.
Do you think, let me ask you this finally. I always wonder, what would Tyson have been if he didn't go to jail? Do you think he would have won the fights against Foreman and Lewis and the guys that were fighting and even Holyfield early? Or would he have continued to get exposed the way Douglas exposed him? And even Razor Ruddock kind of stood there in front of him and was not really scared of him after that.
Yeah, I think Tyson would have been, if he didn't go to jail, he might have been maybe one of the greatest of all time.
Really?
I do think that, yes. Well, I was in jail once for a day, and I didn't enjoy that one day. So I'm glad I did. But to spend 3 years in jail, I think that might take a lot out of anybody in the world. Yeah. I'm just joking.
No, I get it. Freddie, always good to talk to you, man. Hope you get back in that gym real soon. Hope we see you and Pacquiao and all your other guys back in the ring sooner rather than later, man.
Yeah, if you get any juice, let me know.
Appreciate it, Freddie.
Thank you.